Hello and many thanks for tuning in to the Corker History Podcast, which is brought to you by South Dublin County Council and the Heritage Council. I'm Turtle Bunbury. On this opening episode, we are going to talk about the origins of Corker, the formative years of the landscape in and around present-day Corker Park. I've always loved the fact that wherever you are standing in Ireland, somebody has stood on that spot before, or almost wherever. I mean, we can't guarantee that every single square foot has been stood on, but humans have been in Ireland a long time, 11, 12,000 years or more in some parts, so it seems pretty likely that a human has lived or fought or walked or stood round about where you are now, way back in another age. Now, in this podcast series, this history of Corker, I'm mainly going to focus on the last 300 years or so, although I will be going way back in time for a few moments. This introductory episode explores the history of Corker up until the 18th century when, as I'll explain in the next episode, the place became a hotbed for the French Huguenot refugees who built Corker House, as well as the gunpowder mills that were once of such immense importance. We'll cover that and the rest of the story in three more episodes after that. So, in the beginning. Well, Corker is just the sort of place where humans would have been ambling about when they first arrived in Ireland. If you could strip away the towns and factories and roads of our modern age, you'd find the landscape around Corker offers a very useful path between the mountains and the Liffey. 1,000 years ago, most of this landscape would have been a forest. Bear in mind that, as the crow flies, it's only about 12 kilometres from Corker to the GPO on O'Connell Street. 12,000 metres! Corker, the word, means marshy place in Irish. Cork, as in the city and county, derives its name from the same word, a marshland. And certainly the Corker Domain, Corker Park, was very much in a low-lying area, with the Camac River meandering through the middle of it with various little streams and pools and natural springs dotted around. It is thought there was an island in the middle of this marshy place, a slightly higher and drier chunk of land well suited to the construction of a defensive fort. Now, there is some evidence of mounds and raths and ringforts around and about Corker from the age of the hunters and gatherers. Back in the 1980s, archaeologists were laying a gas pipeline and they found a number of flint leaf-shaped points and chert end scrapers along the east of what is now Corker Park. What are these pointy flints and chert end scrapers of which you speak? Well, they were the original kitchen utensils for things like removing animal hides and chopping up meat and veg. A flint from around 5000 BC was found when they were building the dual carriageway. Elsewhere, they found a Neolithic arrowhead in a garden in Clondalkin, and there's been a couple of Bronze Age axe heads. So, as I say, the point is that people have been in these parts for an awful long time. Things began to hotten up around Corker when the first monastic settlement was founded a couple of kilometres northeast at Clondalkin, maybe 1400 years ago, around about 630 AD, they reckon. That's a couple of centuries after St. Paddy was doing the rounds. The story runs that it was founded by a saint named Mochua, a descendant of Mac Con, who is one of those semi-mythical early High Kings of Ireland. As a child, Mac Con was apparently suckled on a greyhound, which is kind of Westeros if you're a Game of Thrones fan. Anyway, there was definitely something magical about St. Mochua. It is said that he studied under St. Kevin of Glendalough before he set off to bring the light of Christianity to the long-bearded pagans of this island. And you've got to hand it to the guy. He gave it everything he had. He created fountains and rivers wherever he went, a miracle here, a miracle there. He killed a beastly lake monster at one point, and he helped eradicate a plague of yellow fever that burned through Ireland in the 7th century. And between the jigs, he's also the guy who apparently founded Clondalkin. Well, somebody founded Clondalkin because, as you may know, it became a settlement of considerable renown. That round tower, which of course stands today, that's been there for 1,000 years, and it is reckoned to be one of the earliest in Ireland. It's also the slenderest, and what a beauty it is. there was some form of a scriptorium in Clondalkin. And the scriptorium, that's the place where monks wrote and drew and produced books like the Book of Kells. And we know that the monks of Clondalkin produced a gospel mass book in the 9th century because parts of it survived. The surviving parts have, for some reason or another, fetched up in a library in the city of Karlsruhe in southwest Germany. It depicts a beast with hooves and a horn, which sounds a little ominous, but that's it was clearly on their mind in Clondalkin in the 9th century. And it also includes what I believe to be the earliest known writing in the Irish language. So that's quite a double act. Right beside Corker, there's Kilmateed. That apparently means Church of Tig, but we don't know who Tig was. In fact, while we're on the subject of mystery, Clondalkin itself stands for Dalkin's Meadow. And we haven't a rasher's who Dalkin was either, or at least I don't. If somebody out there does, do let me know. These are the unanswered questions that keep us historians awake until the small hours. On the plus side, we do, as I say, know that Corker means marshy place, and we know the entire district was called Crosslands because it was controlled by the Christian Church, who had placed a number of crosses in various points in order to delineate parish boundaries and so on. That's why the whole area was known as the Barony of Upper Cross. Where there be monks, there be Vikings. That's a sort of unwritten rule of the medieval age. And sure enough, the Vikings came to Clondalkin. They ransacked the monastery in 833 AD, torched the entire place apparently, and then one of them, a Norse warrior by name of Amlav Konung, who may also be the same person as Olaf the White. It's always hard to make sense of who's who in this era. Imagine a future historian trying to work out what the people in our age did by reading a bunch of Marvel comics. Either way, Amlav, Olaf the Viking, and his merry men built a fort either on or near the site of the monastery. That was then smashed to smithereens by the Irish clans, but then the Vikings decided to convert to Christianity, and everyone lived happily ever after, or sort of. So the lands at Corker and around about it were still church land when the Norman, or should I say Cambro-Norman, Anglo-Norman, anyway, you probably know who I mean, the chainmail-clad French-speaking warriors led by a man we know as Strongbow, they bashed their way north from Wexford and Waterford and conquered the Viking city of Dublin in 1170. And that set in motion a whole new age for Ireland. They introduced feudalism and taxation and chivalry and stone castles and bunny rabbits. The Normans loved eating bunny rabbits. Just before the Normans advanced on Dublin, Rory O'Connor, the last High King of Ireland, apparently encamped a powerful army at Clondalkin, maybe 30,000 men. The idea was that they would help the Vikings in Dublin to defeat these horrible Norman newcomers. Anyway, it didn't happen. The High King's army remained in Clondalkin for 3 days, but when they learned that Dublin was on fire and that Viking treachery was afoot and that the Normans were on track to seize the city, well, those 30,000 men retreated. Did those warriors camp where Corker Park is today? I'd wager a shilling or two that they did. Clondalkin continued to grow. By the late 14th century, there were at least 5 streets. By the Tudor age, it was regarded as a substantial village with a market and whatnot. The parish church was certainly quite a building, 120 foot long, 50 foot wide, 3 altars, although it was in pretty poor nick by the time the Protestant Reformation kicked off in the 16th century. Fast forward to 1642. It's a terrible year for Clondalkin. It's the time of the Confederate Wars. The Irish are seeking to turn back the clock on what is now the inevitable conquest of Ireland by our neighbours across the sea. A troop of soldiers arrives from Dublin and burns the whole place down. The nearby castle of Dean's Rath was destroyed 6 months later. And by 1656, a surveyor arrives in Clondalkin and he declares that it comprises of nothing more than a stump of a castle and some thatched houses. He did actually mention the Round Tower, which has stood as a silent witness to all of this. Now, the owner of the lands throughout this time, or at least since the Normans had turned up, was technically speaking the Archbishop of Dublin. Indeed, the first mention of Corker itself comes from 1326, when it was listed as part of the Archbishop of Dublin's Manor of Clondalkin. on the site of Corker House, close to where the stables are today, there was a castle with a moat. One early record says its ruins consisted of an arched entrance, a chunk of a battlemented parapet, and eight windows. We don't know when it was built, but the fact it had a moat suggests it was reasonably important. Mind you, it was seemingly constructed on the high ground of the marsh, so the marsh itself kind of became the moaty bit, although it has been suggested that the moat was fed by a tributary of the Camac River. Details. I know. Who built it? Again, we don't know. Maybe the Eustace family, who held lands in the area in the 16th century. The thing is, the Eustace family were Catholic, which means they were on the losing side. And what tends to happen when you're on the losing side in history is that all your records, like, say, when you built your castle and who lived there, they're all kind of lost. That's why we know so little about all the ruined Catholic abbeys and monasteries around the island. The records did not survive the Protestant Reformation, or very few of them did. At the time of the Confederate Wars in the 1640s, Corker seems to have been home to a Catholic by name of Ralph Mills. His name appears on a list of Papist proprietors published after Oliver Cromwell and his New Model Army had conquered Ireland in the 1650s. And the 1650s, well, I mean, the whole 17th century was a crazy bad time to be around. There were horrible wars across Europe, with everyone who fought believing 100% that their cause was the right one and that to lose would be existential, the end of all. Ralph Mills of Corker was probably a supporter of the Catholic Confederation, which opposed Cromwell. So when Cromwell won, his lands were taken from him and transferred into the ownership of somebody who supported Cromwell. That somebody was a Protestant by name of William Trundle. It seems Mr. Trundle lived in a farmhouse constructed in about 1650 on the site of the earlier medieval moated castle. I've looked and I can't find diddly squat about William Trundle, save that the lands at Corker were registered to him at the time when Cromwell's Republic failed and the monarchy was restored in 1660 under Charles II. I would love to find a connection between William Trundle of Corker and John Trundle, the London bookseller who published the first edition of Shakespeare's Hamlet in 1603. The next owner of Corker was John Carberry, an alderman of Dublin, and alderman kind of means elderman, as in town elder. John Carberry, who owned at least part of Corker, was one of the Catholics that was still hanging in there in the late 17th century after Cromwell and all that. His daughter married Matthew Barnwall, a prominent Catholic and a captain in King James II's Irish army, who would be killed in the Siege of Derry in 1690. And other parts of Corker at this time, it would have belonged to Peter Nottingham, another Jacobite, a nephew of Patrick Sarsfield, the Earl of Lucan, who was the great hero of the Siege of Limerick and one of King James's main commanders. So when King James lost the war, the Nottingham lands were forfeited, and I'm pretty sure the Carberry lands were taken at this time also. It looks like the lands at Corker were then taken up by a guy called Stephen Fitzwilliam Brown. He certainly owned part of Corker by 1703. His grandfather was a barrister from Dublin who'd snapped up a huge chunk of property in South Dublin during the land shakeups of Charles II's reign. Stephen inherited most of this, and he was something of an architect. In fact, he built a house near Clane in 1718, which would become Clongowes-wood College, one of Ireland's principal Catholic schools. But regarding Corker, it is hard to know who actually owned the place or who lived there during this period. All we can say for sure is that the land changed hands quite a lot during the late 17th century with the switch from Protestant to Catholic to Protestant dominance. In 1691, William of Orange's army destroyed King James's forces, paving the way for the infamous Penal Code, that series of laws that severely restricted the rights of Ireland's Catholic majority. They were prohibited from buying land or carrying arms. If they did have land, they had to distribute it equally amongst all their sons unless they converted. Priests were forbidden from wearing clerical garb or holy emblems in public. No child was to be educated as a Catholic. It was a terrible time to be a Catholic, but a good time to be a Protestant or to become one. And indeed, if you were a Protestant in a part of Europe where Protestantism was struggling, then Ireland might suddenly look rather attractive. Like, say, if you were a French Protestant, a Huguenot like Louis Chesneau, the wine merchant and property dealer who bought Corker from Stephen Brown in 1703 and introduced a new age to the area, the Huguenot era, about which I will talk next time in episode 2, The French Connection. I'll tell the story of the gunpowder mills in episode 3. Episode 4, we'll look at the Finlay family who lived at Corker for 150 years. And we'll round it out with a final episode on the Collie family, who inherited Corker from the Finlays during the First World War, and that'll bring the story up until the heady days of recent times. But if you can't wait that long, or if you would like to read the full story of Corker, you'll find it all in my book, Corker, The Life and Times of a South Dublin Domain, available from South Dublin County Council's libraries, including Clondalkin and Tallaght, or you can find the full content available on my own website, turtlebunbury.com. Just go to the search bar, look for Corker. Until the next time, thanks for listening.